What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
I love the basketball. Was that a song, John?
Basketball Jones?
Yeah, that was it. Basketball Jones. I love the basketball. But the truth is, John Krofcik, I'm Larry Rifkin. The truth is, I do love basketball.
Yeah.
Do you?
You like the Knicks? I watch it occasionally, but I'm not a super fan by any means.
Well, what's your favorite sport?
I like baseball. I've told you before.
Okay, baseball. So that's still your favorite
sport.
Yeah,
I like the slowness of it. Basketball, you know, I'll go with, sometimes we used to go up and watch the girls play and stuff in the XL Center once in a while, and I'd have to ask my son, what just happened? You know, they stopped, because it just, everything happens
so fast.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that I want to get to, because one of the things that I think you and I have as a perspective on basketball, even though it may not be your favorite sport, but you can really appreciate it, is because we live in the land of the UConn women's
yes.
Huskies. And they are so good at what they do, so pure. And their athleticism and their teamwork, it's like watching ballet, the way they play.
I enjoy watching them. And they play basketball, I think, the way basketball should be played. You know, they don't just got the one or two people that are dominating. You pass them the ball and it all happens like in the pros. But so, it's a little more enjoyable play.
And let's be honest. I mean, this is a program at UConn. It's not just they have a good season and then they have three losing seasons. This is institutionalized, their brilliance and their success. And,
sure.
Of course, Gino Auriemma and Chris Daly and all the folks at UConn deserve so much praise. And so you and I look at basketball through that prism. And I love, though, the grace. I love the speed. I love the power. I love the fact that there's a real international flavor to basketball today. Many players coming from all parts
That's
of
true.
The world. And, of course, they have become real personalities in our culture, particularly at the NBA level, where LeBron is like Lady Gaga, you know, one name,
right.
LeBron. And, you know, don't forget, with football players, though Tom Brady being the exception, he's been around so long, and he's so handsome. And
right,
a real
right.
American hero. But, you know, they wear helmets. We don't know what they look like. Many are 400 pounds and so forth. Basketball players are real personalities. They don't have anything over their head. We see who they are.
That's
we
true.
Get to know them.
Yep, that's true.
And it's a much smaller assemblage. And for you and I, John, also, the game, of course, was invented just up the road.
Up in Springfield.
By? Dr. James Naismith.
Oh, there we go.
Now, have you ever been to the Basketball Hall of Fame?
I went there once when my kids were small.
Yeah, we've got to go up there. Honestly, I haven't been there in a long time. In fact, I remember that we went up there when my wife was pregnant. And so we haven't been back. And she,
yeah, like...
and she delivered the next day. So that was June 8, 1986.
Wow.
Because that was my birthday, and our daughter was born on June 9th. So I do remember that. But get up to the Basketball Hall of Fame if you can, because I think it really has a lot of interactivity
yeah.
that I didn't necessarily see up in the Baseball Hall of Fame. I didn't see as much interactivity.
No, I don't think there is. It's mostly, you know, you go through and you see
a lot of panels
yeah,
and
yeah.
statistics and all.
That's true.
But, you know, look, we had a podcast on football where we argued that football has a lot of problems. And you see the half-empty stadiums, you see a lot of the controversies, and you see the impact on the longevity of their health and their brain activity.
Right. And that's going to really affect football in the future, I think. I think you're going to see the Tom Brady's and these other guys that have been around retire because of it. And I think you're going to see a big change in the game.
Yeah, I think basketball and baseball, honestly, in my mind, are going to be vying for the real love of Americans.
Well, you know, the video games are getting pretty good now, so they'll have two nerds with the teams playing video games, and we'll watch it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, on this day's podcast, we have a really fascinating guy called Eric Malinowski, and he's a sports writer who has the great perspective, just as we have UConn women where we broadcast or emanate from. He's got a great bird's eye view of what's going on in Silicon Valley. And so he sees, right looking out his window, the brilliance of the Golden State Warriors.
Okay, yep.
Now, they've been in the finals for the last 3 years. They've won the finals 2 out of 3 years. And what is really fascinating, he's written a book called Beta Ball, How Silicon Valley and Science Built One of the Greatest Basketball Teams in History. And what you're going to learn, and so this is more than a podcast about basketball, is someone coming in with that mindset from Silicon Valley and saying, I'm going to remake the entire culture of this team,
right,
from the front office to the back room to what goes on the court. And they're going to use totally different metrics. They're going to use technology to interact with their fans, to evaluate the strength and conditioning of their players. I mean, a whole range of things that I think will really change basketball going forward.
Yeah, this reminds me a little bit of Moneyball for the baseball. So, but
and yes, all of it out there,
right,
in Oakland, right?
Right.
So fascinating. So we're going to get to him right now, but you're going to love what he has to say, and you're going to have new insights as to how have they become just the most remarkable team of this era. So here we go. Beta Ball on America Trends Podcast. Eric Malinowski is with us. He's the author of this new book, Beta Ball. And Eric, for those who might be thinking, well, look, this is the Bay Area, and we remember Moneyball as it relates to baseball. Is there something analogous about Moneyball and Beta Ball?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. They actually, I mean, they're neighbors. You know, you could literally, you know, throw a baseball from one arena to the other. So maybe there's something in the drinking water in Oakland. I'm not sure, but yeah, you know, the thing with Moneyball was that the A's were looking to exploit, you know, certain market inefficiencies, and they were compelled to do that because of limited resources and finances. And Warriors have a little bit of the opposite problem. You know, they have all of these great resources. You know, they have these new owners that came in 2010 and were willing to spend the money to try to, you know, gain an advantage on their opponents. But, you know, the problem was that they were just a historically dreadful franchise. You know, they were starting, you know, they were not just terrible, and they were just, you know, historically bad by so many metrics. And so they were really behind the eight ball. And what they looked at that was they decided that this was a case where they need to strip the organization down to its bare parts, and they're going to try to rebuild it from scratch, and they're going to try to do it essentially the way that you would a Silicon Valley startup and instill some of those similar principles and philosophies. And they didn't know at the beginning that it was all going to work out, and they certainly made their fair share of mistakes along the way. But in time, I think they started to see a lot of their decisions become validated.
Now, many of us who are fans of other teams, and I'm a big NBA guy, but I happen to be a fan of the New York Knicks, and I say to myself...
So do I.
You are too. All right, well...
Yeah, 20 years now.
I'm sorry for you. I've been much longer at this terrible trough than you have. But, you know, the point is how Silicon Valley and science built one of the greatest basketball teams in history. Is this something that is duplicatable by other teams, and why haven't they done it yet?
It's a really good question, and the answer is not exactly. And you know, the thing that I think the biggest criticism sometimes with the Warriors is that these people say that, well, it's just about having a guy like Steph Curry or having a guy like Klay Thompson or then being able to bring in a guy like Kevin Durant, and these really are the reasons,
right,
you know, why they were able to turn it around so quickly. And I think when you read the book, I hope that readers would understand that it's a little more complex than that. There's a little bit more nuance. And the idea is that this ownership group came in and they worked really to empower their employees in a certain way that, you know, they're going to bring in people with varied kind of skill sets and strengths and some people with weaknesses, and everyone is looking to raise each other up. But you know, this idea that they never know where the next good idea is going to come from. That was how they set out to run the franchise. And we've seen elite teams in the NBA before. But the Warriors are literally doing unprecedented things. So I think that other teams could look at this and say, well, we can pick one aspect of this or that, and you can put yourself in a good position to, you know, the Warriors have had a lot of good fortune. But I think at the same time, they put themselves in an optimal position to not only accept that good fortune, but to use that to elevate their basketball team to something that we've never seen before. So I think it's all parts of that equation. But I think other teams could look at this not as a blueprint, but they could look at this as certain aspects of that, and I think they could definitely apply this to their franchises in certain ways.
Well, Eric, we as fans, we look at it pretty simplistically. Hey, is that a good pick and roll? Is that a good jump shooter? What is this? But you talk about all the things that really go into measurement, and we can get back to the front office and the way they sell tickets and interact with their fans using social media. But if we look at what's going on the court, we're looking at things like player efficiency ratings, defensive metrics, right, heat maps, play visualizations. We're talking about very sophisticated approaches. Or mm-hmm. I remember, of course, even Kyle Korver, I think, where they were measuring, yep, you know, his range in terms of how quickly he could get off the floor and get up that beautiful jump shot. And he was a slow right. afoot, but people were saying, yeah, but you got to know how quickly he can rise and fire. I mean, so they're measuring all kinds of things that we don't think about.
Yeah, you know, I think that baseball is still a little bit ahead of the curve on this. You know, we're not looking at Steph Curry's, you know, launch angle on his jumpers, you know, the crook of his elbow. We're not quite there yet in terms of NBA. And I don't know, maybe that, you know, we'll see how applicable that would be if we get there, and we probably will. But no, I mean, it's this idea that we can crunch numbers, and the NBA is these things that we previously thought were unquantifiable. And the Warriors really were, if you're looking for proof of concept, I mean, they were, you know, this is the SportView motion capture tracking system, which is so ubiquitous in the NBA. And the Warriors were the fifth team in the NBA to be a signatory to that. And the previous four were all of these other teams that were you'd think of as being analytically inclined. And then you had the Warriors come in, who had basically were rock bottom in the NBA. And on the basketball side, they had nothing to lose. And I'll say that for the first, you know, couple of years that they started collecting this data, they didn't know what to do with it. Maybe they hadn't, you know, hired the right people. You know, there just wasn't personnel out there that was well-versed in this stuff. But to the Warriors' credit, they looked at this and they realized this is where the NBA is headed. This is where the game is evolving. In time, we're going to be able to know what to do with this, but in the meantime, let's just collect it. Let's just gather it all up, and we'll figure out all the other parts of it later. And so, you know, if you're looking at it, they had a little bit of a long-term strategy. Yes, I think it helped that they didn't really have a lot to lose, but at least I think they had the foresight to look at it and to say, this is where the NBA is headed, and maybe this is something that will pay off in the end for us.
On the other hand, they were a 50-plus win team with Mark Jackson, and they made a change,
right,
and they brought in Steve Kerr. Now, there's an article just today in ESPN, the magazine, and I don't even know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, the charcuterie board that revolutionized basketball, about Steve Kerr right. and the way he got together with his coaches. I mean, how much of the human element is required here? You said the data was there, but was there anybody really to take it, run with it, bring in his own philosophy, that being parts of the triangle that Phil Jackson had taught him? I mean, how does all this right. come together?
Yeah, I think that, I think it was fun to go back and do the book and understand all of these expectations that Steve Kerr really was under. And we're really only talking about, you know, 3 years ago in real time. You know, he's now entering his fourth season. But, you know, this was a guy for the perfect team at the perfect moment. He had such a head start, I think, with everything that Mark Jackson had built up. But at the same time, there were expectations, and there was the understanding that this was a championship-level team. And what Steve was able to really do, and this is what I get into the book, is that, you know, he was able to understand that it's not just about chucking up a bunch of threes. That you don't have to, you know, feel beholden to this sort of traditional pick-and-roll style offense that Mark Jackson instituted. You know, Steve Kerr had learned from all of the best coaches in the game. You know, Phil Jackson, you know, back when the triangle was in vogue in the NBA, you know, you're talking about guys like Greg Popovich. You're talking about Lenny Wilkins and Lute Olson in college. And these are guys that he learned, you know, all of these intricacies from throughout his career. You know, Steve was not a star player. He was like the super sixth man, you know. He was the sub that everybody counted on to make the one or two big shots every game when they needed him. And he understood that you didn't have to sacrifice offense to play great defense. I think that when we look back at what Steve, what was so revolutionary about it, was not necessarily this you know, very specific motion offense, the sort of hybrid Greg Popovich, Phil Jackson style offense. But this idea, you bring an assistant coach, a guy like Ron Adams, who has been in the NBA for decades, and you institute a philosophy that, you know, if you actually play better defense, your offense will be more efficient than it has ever been before, and that both sides of the court matter just about the same. And that's what we've seen. That's why their offense has been so great in turn, because their defense has been so great. So, you know, nobody thought that they were going to be able to excel anymore in offense. And the defense part, people thought, oh, yeah, they can improve on that. And, boy, it has worked wonders. You know, this is he had the right personnel. But he also had the right kind of strategy for them.
We'll return to this episode of America Trends in just a moment. If you like what we're doing here at America Trends Podcast, please don't keep it to yourself. I know there are a lot of people, John, who think, well, if I'm listening and somebody else wants to listen at the same time, maybe we're going to collide and they're not going to be able to hear us.
Yeah.
Is that the way the technology works?
No, there's plenty of bandwidth. Everybody can listen at the same time.
All so right. Well, that sure dispels that myth. Now, you can do a number of things that would really be helpful to us. You could give us a kind rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, and that boosts what they consider to be our value and visibility. And what does that do, John?
Well, that puts us in the forefront, so that you can find us easier, and most important is other people can find us easier.
And you can subscribe there or on our site, americatrendspodcast.com, or wherever you're listening, so we can alert you to new episodes of the podcast, which, by the way, we put out twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And stay in touch with us on both Facebook and Twitter at Trends Podcast. Or you can like us on Facebook or follow us where, John?
On Twitter.
On Twitter. That's right. Where the world turns to hear fake news or whatever it is. Well, you can direct message us at Trends Podcast or using hashtag Trends Podcast. And you know, John, with our growing audience, and really it's been pretty remarkable, a lot of people just came to us the last month or two, and they might have missed earlier episodes. Can they get them again?
They can look through them and pick the ones they want to listen to. They're all on the website, and a lot of them are up on iTunes, many of them.
All right. Well, listen, there's lots of material to listen to. We hope you have the time, and we'll lend it to us because we try to make it worth your while. And thanks so much for listening.
And tell your friends.
We now return to this episode of America Trends.
Well, let's go back, because you remind us that Silicon Valley has really changed just about everything about every organization in America, and those that haven't learned are now by the wayside. So here are the Golden State Warriors, rather hapless for many years, then starting to improve, but not where they need to be. And ultimately, there's a change in ownership. They become this supernova, and you've got this gentleman who heads the organization, who has financed some of these venture capital activities in Silicon Valley. So what did he bring to this? Let's take it back to the front office.
Yeah, this is Joe Lacob, who had been a pretty well-known venture capitalist in Silicon Valley for 25 years. He had worked at Kleiner Perkins Caulfield Byers, which is, you know, one of the preeminent firms on San Hill Road. And this was a guy who understood, you know, he was a sports guy. You know, he had helped found CBSSportsLine.com and some other entities. You know, he had also had some failures. He would have been a big investor in an upstart women's professional basketball league that essentially, you know, directly took on the WNBA back when it was a pretty up and coming entity. And he lost millions on that. So this was a guy that by the time, you know, he had come to take ownership of the Warriors, he had had these experiences. He had also been a minority investor with the Boston Celtics. But he understood that a large portion of this is going to hinge on, you know, going about this in a smarter, different way about assessing personnel. It's not just about having the right kinds of players on your roster, you know, which is to say, don't just go out and sign the, you know, the most available guys to the largest contracts, which is what the Warriors had done for, you know, 20 years before.
And other teams to be unnamed.
And a lot of other teams, certainly not thinking of perhaps the Knicks and, you know, Joakim Noah or anything like that. I'll go instead. But, you know, this idea that you also need to hire the right kind of people in the front office. You need to hire a president who's been around. You need to hire a general manager who has the right kind of experience. And then once you know that you have the right guys in place, you need to let them do their job. And you can be the person in the room that helps make the final decision. But you need to value everyone's input, and you need to have everyone in the room understand that you're all there invested in the same, solving the same problem in the same kind of outcome. And that, you know, that sort of collaboration and that trust in your fellow colleague, that's the best kind of way to run an organization. That was something that he had learned with startup culture. And he had seen, dozens of companies over the years thrive because of those philosophies and that kind of an ethos. And that was what, in terms of anything that this happened by design, that was what I think was one of the most meaningful aspects of it.
Well, I've got to imagine that all the other NBA teams looking at this, I mean, even from a business standpoint, as well as what goes on the court, had to be in awe. I mean, you had season ticket renewals shooting up by 99%. Local TV ratings were the highest of any market. Social media presence doubling in 1 year's time. I mean, partnerships with corporations up 20%. These are the kinds of things that other owners must look at and go to their presidents and general managers and say, hey, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's I think that with owning a professional sports franchise, it's actually easy to make a profit. I think that you could pretty much, just with the way that values appreciate, you could almost buy any franchise just about, and you could flip it in a couple of years for any, you could do a net positive deal on that. But the idea that that they were going to pay a record sum of money for a rock bottom, historically dreadful franchise. And the idea that, 7 years later, their $450 million purchase price, I think they just got valued by Forbes at maybe $2.6 billion, something around those lines. But, and I would say that that's far conservative. I would say, they're building a $1 billion privately financed arena in downtown San Francisco. It's going to open 2 years from this month. And I would say if you were coming in off the street and you wanted to make a legitimate offer to buy the Warriors, it would have to be in that $4 to $5 billion range. So you're talking about 10 times whatever return on your investment. This not only one of the most successful franchises in sports history, but this might end up being one of the all-time great business deals that we've ever seen executed before.
And I think that's the point, that there are so many aspects to running a team. You are a media organization. You are a business.
Right.
You are a basketball team. You're so many different things to a community. And Steve Ballmer, who bought the Clippers, of course, out of Microsoft, mm-hmm. is he attempting the same kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, he and Joe Lake have been friends for a long time. They have a pretty friendly rivalry as these things go. Joe was a bit, Joe was a great champion for Steve, really, help pave the way for him to, eventually purchase the Clippers from Donald Sterling. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you look at what he's trying to do, they're working to build their own separate arena down there in Southern California, which is very similar to what the Warriors are doing now. And so, yeah, I mean, they follow a lot of that stuff. They understand that, this game is not just about basketball, but it's also about this whole idea of the fan experience and really having your fans embrace everything that is going on, not just on the basketball side. This is this is something that the Warriors think about all the time. What is it like from the moment that the fan walks in through the arena doors? How long does it take for them to get to their seat? How long are they standing in line for the concessions? When the game is not going on, what are they actually looking at? They think about all of these things, and if there are ways to improve any part of that experience, that's something that they're going to invest in. I think that's pretty much how you have to operate if you're going to be a professional sports franchise owner in this day and age. I think that it's not just about the sport, but it's about everything else that's going on when the game is not going on.
If the sport really is built on innovation, when we look at the shot clock or the three-pointer or more recently different styles of play, what was it that they were able to do in terms of finding a technological solution to a problem that they saw organizationally or on the court? What do you think was the most impactful of these technological advances?
I think first of all, it was just being so adamant that they were going to invest in this sort of thing. That they were, you walk through their practice facility. There's any given day, there's all sorts of cameras and gadgetry, hanging from the ceilings, and it feels like, every few months you see a new company that they're partnering up with, and these partnerships are not long term, they're not locked in, but they're willing to try anything. They use their they use their geography to their advantage. You know, being in the backyard of Silicon Valley and having, you know, all of these third-party companies nearby, they figure that this is an advantage that we can exploit that, that other teams around the NBA simply cannot, or, you know, would be less willing to do so. I would say the other team, you know, if you're talking about impact, you know, it's not just the science part, but also understood that no matter how good your analytics are, you can have the best spreadsheets, you can compile the best reports and line up, configurations and whatnot based on the numbers you're pulling in. But if you don't hire the right kind of people that can take that data, take those reports, interpret them and explain that to the coaching staff and have that knowledge trickle down to them and have them have that knowledge trickle down to the players and convince them, oh, you might have to sacrifice something. You might have to change the way you're playing a little bit, but the team is going to find more success because of it, and it's because of these numbers that we've aggregated. If you don't have people, if you don't hire the right people in place that can explain those things, it doesn't matter how good your analytics are. It does not matter how good your data is. It's going to be for nothing. You have to be able to apply it in a real basketball kind of way, and the only way you do that is to have people in place that can explain it in real terms and really to try to persuade people, because in some cases you're talking about old school people that don't want to change the way they coach, don't want to change the way they play, but they could be sacrificing a better kind of basketball and more success. So that really is the whole part of the equation. And I think it took them a little while to figure that out, but eventually they came around to it.
Well, Kirk Lacob, who is the vice president of GSW Sports Ventures and the assistant general manager for the Warriors, and he was quoted recently talking about the impact of their sleep technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is, we talk about next frontiers. The Warriors have been on this for 2 or 3 years now. They partnered up with a local sleep expert here in the Bay Area named Sherry Ma. I talked to her for the book, and the helpful that they had certain advocates on the team, such as Andre Iguodala, who had, done his research about sleep. And that really helped because, this is a case where, a lot of these players, they love taking, 2 to 3 hour naps on game day. And maybe this is something that they have done for, years. And this is something that works for them. And then, you have an expert come in and say, maybe you want to shave that down to something closer to 45 minutes or certainly something an hour. And all of a sudden you have guys feel like that outside people are coming in who don't know the game and that they are trying to mess with their routine in some way. And you're going to meet a lot of pushback in those instances. And so, those are the sorts of internal challenges that they've fought over the years. But I think as in a lot of things, I think winning makes these things go over a little bit easier. It helps smooth over whatever rough attitudes people might have. So I think that has certainly helped. But at the same time, they've been able to impress upon these guys that, look, there's a better way to go about this. We've done the research. We've brought in the experts. Maybe just give it a shot and see what happens.
The advances in things like video capture, optical tracking, which makes it a lot easier to break down what's happening across games and practices. Can you state for us how important that's been to the Warriors' success?
Yeah, I mean, it allows them to analyze and crunch their numbers in such a way that, again, this was fantasy for a long time. This was this idea that you could, instantly quantify how fast the guy's running up and down the court and how many dribbles he's taking per possession. This is stuff that we never thought would be able to be quantifiable. And at the same time, you can use biometrics data and stuff like that, and you can analyze guys in practice. And then you're talking about stuff like health and fatigue. And then you're talking about some next frontier kind of stuff. Like, now you're talking about injury prevention. And now you're talking about, monitoring fatigue and player evaluations and things like that. And I think if we're talking about where the NBA is headed, I think that's really sort of the next frontier. That's the next code that we need to crack. And I don't think a lot of teams are really close to it. But, Steve Kerr, this is something he's talked about from the moment that he's come to the Warriors, is that, preparation, fatigue, energy, sleep, all of these things, it's not just about the basketball X's and O's sense, but it's about what are these players feeling on the inside. What are their motivations? Can we run them out there day after day? And then can we develop a system, and they call it redlining, with the Warriors, that's the jargon they use, but can we develop a system that's going to let us know when these guys are close to redlining? And then we can go to them and say, we're going to have to sit you. It's going to be better off for the long term. But this is what the data is telling us. And so in that sense, the wars have gotten close. But, yeah, there's some exciting frontiers that a lot of these scientists, a lot of these analysts have yet to crack. And so that's the kind of stuff that the wars are looking at going forward.
I'd imagine that with some of these predictive technologies and using various intelligences, you can almost tell when somebody's really at the apex of their career. And when you're looking at a new contract and you say, well, you've slowed down in this way and some other measurements demonstrate this. Because I remember that LeBron James, I think last year, was one of the quickest years he's ever had. So that showed that while he's aging, he's also staying so conditioned that he's getting faster as he gets older.
Yeah, it's interesting. I, this has been a source of some controversy. You know, as we collect more data, obviously there are going to be ways that data is going to be used against players in some ways going forward. I mean, that's something that they can help legislate, you know, using the collective bargaining agreements and all that. And I know that, you know, obviously there have been some provisions in the new CBA that was just signed, you know, in terms of, you know, player and data collection and things like that. But, you know, in this case, it worked out well for LeBron, because it showed that, you know, he was, in terms of his energy, you know, he's good. He's as good as ever. But yeah, there's going to be cases, I think, as we go forward and as there's more technology and more data there's going to be some controversial applications of that. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes. But, you know, so far, you know, it's been a lot of good and not so much bad, but this is the way that these technology curves go over time, and it'll be interesting to see how the NBA adapts to that sort of thing. But I would say in terms of that realm, so far, so good.
How much has all this technology been able to keep the Warriors healthy and on the court? That's such a big part of the NBA, because a few star players and one goes down and it changes the entire dynamic. So how much has technology helped them with their health-related issues? I know that there was some problem that Stephon Curry had about his chronic ankle injuries. Have they been able really to help him using technology?
Yeah, I think that, they were certainly able to in terms of conditioning. I think with his ankles, that was a big thing, because they just kept running him out there, and maybe it wasn't 100% yet, and maybe that's not what their data wasn't telling him, that he was in the danger zone. But I think they developed systems over time that helped address those things. And, you know, he's largely been able to overcome those. You know, he's been pretty injury-free, I think, the last 4 years or so. This is something that they're constantly thinking about. This is... You know, I think it was during their championship run 2 years or 3 years ago where, you know, they had the fewest minutes lost of any team in the NBA to injury. And I don't think that you can look at that and say that that's a coincidence. And they developed this reputation of, oh, they just win because they're healthy, you know, because their main stars never get injured. Well, you look at what happened late last season when Kevin Durant, you know, goes down with a sprained knee ligament in late February. I think they go through a rough stretch where they lose, I think it was 5 out of 7 games, something like that. And then they go ahead and they win 14 games in a row, you know, to almost bring about to the end of the season. And so it's interesting, you know, they when they do encounter these sorts of injuries, which are few and far between, you just have to give them a few games and then they figure out a whole different style of basketball to play and they can adapt on the fly. And I think if you think about the Warriors, in terms of another team's fandom and say how terrifying they are, I think you look at a case study like that and say, this is a team that can adapt to any sort of injury. I think in the NBA, the truism is that, you know, you're only one knee injury away from your team, you know, getting a lot more competitive than you would like. And maybe the Warriors' margin for error is enough that maybe they're two knee injuries away. But they you know, that's where that talent gap, really comes in handy.
Do you think that the Silicon Valley-inspired strategy of positionless basketball is going to be perhaps the greatest contribution that they've made to the sport, where you now see centers or fives who are very mobile and don't play with their back to the basket? I mean, they really are creating something quite unique here.
Yeah, I mean, we're really, you know, I think to some extent these things are cyclical, so I'm not saying it's the end of it, but we've really seen, you know, the traditional 7-foot center just really, you know, come out of style in today's NBA. And that's something that I think, yeah, they've helped popularize, not just with the 3-point shot, but this idea that you have guys that are, you know, of almost similar height, maybe guys that play taller than their usual position, and that allows them to switch positions on the court. So you got, you know, two guards that can play small forward. You got small forwards that can play power forward. And you can mix and match these guys depending on the lineup. And you can put in a guy like Draymond Green, who, you know, is listed generously at 6'7", but is probably closer to 6'5". And you can put him in a small ball lineup. You can have him play, you know, the quote-unquote center position and match him up against certain bigs around the league. And you can use that to your advantage because now you can space the floor and everyone on the floor can shoot a three-pointer and it keeps, you know, defenses, you know, guessing and keeps them honest. So, yeah, I mean, this is something, you know, they talked about for the years, you know, bringing in the right guys with the right sort of locker room chemistry. But at the same time, they're also looking at guys with a certain skill set. And that's something that they've been, you know, cognizant of for a while now. And then you bring in a guy like Steve Kerr who institutes a certain kind of offense and everything just starts clicking.
5 years, 10 years down the road, what do you think will be the greatest contribution they've made to changes in the sport of basketball in our future?
I think it was probably something that went back to what I said before about offense and defense, this idea that, you know, you can have a historically great kind of offense. You know, there are other teams in the NBA such as, you know, you look at like the Houston Rockets who, you know, can shoot and throw up a record number of three-pointers and be amongst the highest scoring teams in the league, but really do sacrifice a not insignificant amount at the defensive end. And if anything, I think the Warriors have taught teams that you really can have it both ways. You can play an elite defense. And if anything, that really is to help your offense be better and just to be able to have that sort of fluid up and down basketball down the court and to have an intensity at both ends. You need the right kind of personnel. You need the right kind of conditioning. You need the right kind of game plan. But if you can bring maybe two out of three of those into each other or try to get all those factors right about the same level, you can play a really fun and, I think, sublime style of basketball.
Absolutely. Well, as a fan to another fan, thank you so much for this great book and all these insights. Beta Ball, How Silicon Valley and Science Built One of the Greatest Basketball Teams in History. Eric Malinowski, thank you for being part of America Trends podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of America Trends.